Hare Krishna. I want to apologize for my delay in coming. I was in another program and it took time to finish and come here. Yesterday we discussed a brief background about the prayers of Queen Kunti. We saw the significance of Vandanam, why it is important for us to chant prayers to the Lord. We discussed that these prayers should not be concocted, rather they should be notable prayers, authorized prayers that have been chanted by the previous great devotees of the Lord. We discussed also various types of prayers. There was a brief discussion on Kunti Charitra, the personality of Kunti Devi, the great devotee of the Lord in Vatsalya Ras. And we also had an outline of how these prayers are so devotional, so simple, and yet so profound. So today, we will begin discussing the verses proper. We will keep in mind the context in which these verses are being spoken. It is an atmosphere of impending separation from Krishna. Krishna is about to leave Hastinapur. He is going to Dwarka. And the Pandavas, Mother Kunti, Draupadi, and in fact all the residents of Hastinapur are feeling very, very sorrowful that Krishna is now going to leave them and he will go to Dwarka. So in the first verse, kindly chant after me.
Namasye purusham padyam Ishwaram prakrite param. Alakshyam sarva bhutanam antar bahir avasthitam.
Alakshyam sarva bhutanam antar bahir avasthitam.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Srimati Kunti said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. So from the very beginning, Kunti Maharani has started by speaking about the greatness of Krishna. Kunti Maharani is aware that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, at the very outset, she is saying, Namaste, I offer my obeisances unto you. Why? Because you are Purusham Tu Adam, Adyam. Adyam means the original, Adi Purush. We chant Brahma Samhita prayers every day. We chant Govindam Adi Purusham Samaham Bhajami. Also we have heard the statement Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. So Krishna is Anadi and Adi. Anadi because he has no origin, and Adi because he is the origin of everything. So Kunti Maharani is addressing Krishna as Adi Purusham. Purusham tu Adyam. You are the original personality of this creation. You are the oldest person. But yet in this pastime, Krishna is appearing as a nephew. Now in normal social dealings, a younger person is the one who offers respects to an elder person. Not the other way around. if at all we offer our namaskars and bow down, it is to someone who is worshipable, respectable and so on. But here we find the opposite. Kunti Maharani is like the mother. She is the paternal aunt of Krishna. And it is she who is saying, I offer my obeisances unto you. Namaskar. Because she understands that although their worldly relationship is one of nephew and aunt, nevertheless, Krishna remains the original personality of this creation. He is the Supreme Lord. This is the ultimate knowledge, the beginning of ultimate knowledge. But yet, how many people in the world are clear about this point? One may be a great scholar, one may be very advanced in various forms of renunciation and austerities, but if one has not understood who is God, then what is the point of one's human life? One time, Srila Prabhupada was visited by a Chaturvedi, Brahmana. Chaturvedi means he knows four Vedas. We have Trivedi, they know three Vedas. Dvivedi, they know two Vedas. Like that. So in the course of the discussion, Prabhupada understood that this Chaturvedi was a Smartha. He was just a ritualistic Brahman. He was not really devotional. And he had not understood the conclusions of the scripture. So after discussing some things, Prabhupada asked him directly, so my dear Chaturvedi ji, you are very learned, a great scholar of all the four Vedas. So please tell me, who is God? So this Chaturvedi was taken aback. He must have been accustomed to all kinds of complicated questions about grammar or about some mantras or about rituals. But here was such a simple question. With piercing gaze, Prabhupada asked him, who is God? So he was flustered. And he began to stutter and stammer and said, but this kind of question, how it can be answered like this and this? So Prabhupada said, it can be answered. So somewhere close by, some children of his disciples were playing. They were Western children. So there was some prasad next to Prabhupada, some sweets, some desh and rasgullas and other things. So he picked up one of those sweets and showed to the children and said, come, you want? So naturally all the children came running. And when they came, with their hands outstretched, Prabhupada took the sweet and kept it behind his back. He said, tell me, who is God? So all the children replied, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada said, very nice, take. And he looked at Chaturvedi, see, these children, they know who is God. They are not educated. Krishna is the Supreme, they know. But you are Chaturvedi and you don't know. So this is very important understanding, because unless we have understood who is God, how can we make our human life successful? We see also here that Kunti Maharani, who was number 7 in the list of 9 people in Vatsalyaras that we discussed yesterday, has given in Nectar of Devotion. She is considering Krishna in a spirit of awe and reverence. She has understood that Krishna is God and she is speaking it clearly. But Yashoda, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, they have no conception of this. In Vrindavan, Krishna is not God. In the place where he should be understood as God, he is not God. Why? Because the sheer love of the residents of Vrindavan for him overwhelms their spiritual understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they think of Krishna in terms of their particular relationships with him, either as a friend or as a master or as their child or as their lover and so on. So Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj did not understand Krishna to be God. They never proclaimed him to be God. And even if they were sometimes met with a doubt, if some people came and expressed a doubt that I think your son may be God, He has lifted Govardhan, he has done such miraculous things. They would dismiss it. Oh, no, no. How can he be God? We just saved him the other day. He always cries. We have to chastise him. He cannot be God. Whereas Kunti Maharani is stating clearly that Krishna is God. This means that Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are at a higher platform than Kunti Maharani. Because there is no conception of awe and reverence. There is only sweetness in the relationship of Yashoda and Nanda. Therefore, they are number one and number two on that list. But nevertheless, as we discussed yesterday, one should not underestimate the value of Kunti Maharani's devotion. One should not think it to be ordinary simply because it is not on the same platform as that of Yashoda, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. Then she goes on to say, Ishwaram prakritihi param. She says that you are beyond the qualities of this material world. What are the qualities of this material world? Sattva, rajas, tamas. Three qualities, three gunas. The word guna means qualities. It also means rope. The three gunas are the ropes by which all of us are bound to this material world. But Krishna is the controller of the gunas, the master of the gunas. Never at any point in time does he come under the clutches of the three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas and tamas. As he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tribhir gunamayir bhave ebhi sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mam ebhyah param avyayam. He says the entire world is being deluded by these three modes. And because they are so deluded, mohitam na abhijanati mam, they do not know me. They do not understand my real nature, which is param, supreme, and avyayam, that I am imperishable. I am the supreme lord. I am beyond the three modes of nature. Because people themselves are under the clutches of the three modes of nature, they think that I am under the three modes of material nature. But factually, I am always beyond. Then Kunti Maharani says, Alaksham sarva bhutanam antir bahir avasthitam. Antar bahir avasthitam means that Krishna is inside everything and he is outside everything also. Krishna or God is a puzzle, very difficult to understand. Especially when we study the Shastras, like the Upanishads, the Vedas and so on, even Bhagavad Gita. Often there are so many things that come up which appear to be contradictory. Like for example, the Upanishads say that the Supreme is heavier than the heaviest and at the same time He is lighter than the lightest. He is larger than the largest and He is smaller than the smallest. He moves faster than the fastest and is also at one place. As Mahavishnu, the origin of all the universes, He is so huge we cannot imagine, beyond our imagination. And at the same time, not only is He so tiny that He is situated in the heart of every living being, but He is so tiny that He is also inside every atom. Andantarastha parmanu chayantarastham. In the Brahma Samhita, Brahmaji explains that every atom is being maintained because Krishna is present inside. The solar system is being maintained. The planets are moving around in their orbit because Krishna is situated there. Gam avishita bhutani dharayami aham ojasa. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, by my oja shakti, I am maintaining all the planets in their orbits. So what is maintaining the atom? Krishna. Because Krishna is inside every atom. So Krishna is inside, Krishna is outside. This is the contradictory nature of Krishna. If this contradiction were applied to anything of this world, it would truly be a contradiction. But in relation with the absolute truth, all such contradictions are resolved. All dualities merge into oneness in the absolute truth. All paradoxes, all opposites become one. The absolute truth is so wide that he can accommodate all the dualities of the world within himself. Therefore, Krishna can be all these things simultaneously. He was inside Uttara's womb, as we discussed yesterday, protecting Parikshit Maharaj. And yet, he was standing in front of Kunti Devi on his chariot, about to leave. So this indicates Krishna's inconceivable potency, by which he is able to simultaneously be inside everything and at the same time be outside everything. He is able to be at one place and he is able to be at every place at the same time. This is called Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that unless we include the idea of Achintya Shakti in relation to God, we will never be able to understand God. Because God is by nature Achintya. We cannot try to figure him out with our brains. There are many people who ask, "Where is God? Show me God." And they ask in a challenging mood. They want to see God. Especially when they are told that God is everywhere. Where is he? We cannot see him. Like Hiranyakashipu. When Prahlad was asked by him, "Where is your Vishnu? All the time you are saying Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu. Where is he? Where are you getting all the strength from?" So Prahlad replied, "My dear father, I am getting my strength to resist you from the same person from whom you are getting your strength to do all the activities in the universe that you have been doing, troubling everyone." So Hiranyakashipu became furious. All the time, "Vishnu, where is he? Vishnu is everywhere." "Everywhere? How is he everywhere? Is he in the pillar?" "Yes, he is in the pillar." And then you know the story. Narasingadeva appeared just to keep Prahlad's word. Now, Narasingadeva in that huge form was not hiding in the pillar. Originally, when Hiranyakashipu constructed that palace and he built the pillar, it is not that the architect built Narasingadeva inside. But by his inconceivable potency, Narasingadeva manifested himself there. For the Lord, nothing is impossible. So he manifested because he had to keep Prahlad's word. Prahlad said, "Krishna is here." So Narasingadeva said, "Yes, I have to keep my devotee's word." And he appeared. So non-devotees cannot understand and see Krishna anywhere and everywhere. So they say, "Where is God?" This is because of Mahamaya, the illusion, the Maya Shakti of the Lord. But there are also devotees who think in this way, out of Yoga Maya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always feeling intense separation from Krishna. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us in our sampradaya how we should hanker for Krishna. We should never think, "I haven't got Krishna." We should always think, "Where is Krishna?" If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in the Anti Leela, was always exhibiting these symptoms of separation, vipralambha, from Krishna. And he would run here and there, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" Similarly, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, about them Srinivas Acharya describes, "He Radhe Vraja Devike Chalalite, He Nanda Suno Kuta, Shri Govardhana Kalpa Pada Patale, Kalindi Vanje Kuta, Goshantaviti Sarvato Vrajapure, Kedair Mahavihvalau, Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yugau, Shri Jiva Gopalakau." Very beautifully, it is being explained how the six Goswamis lived in Vrindavan. Goshana, they were always speaking out loudly, "Iti Sarvato Vrajapure, Everywhere in Vraja, they were wandering around, loudly speaking, Kheder, Mahavihvalo, greatly disturbed and agitated in sorrow. What were they declaring? What were they shouting so loudly in Vraja, all over Vraja? Hey Radhe Vraja Devike, O my dear Radharani, the queen of Vrindavan, Cha Lalite, O Lalita, the intimate associate of Srimati Radharani. Hey Nanda Suna, a son of Nanda Maharaj, Kutaha, where are you? So they were looking for these personalities, Krishna, Radharani, Lalita, running here, running there. Where is Krishna? Where is Radharani? Shri Govardhana Kalpapada Patale Kalindi Vanye Kutaha. Are you on the banks of the Yamuna, Kalindi Vanye, in the forests? Or are you near the Govardhan Hill? Or are you under some Kalpavriksha trees of Vraja? The word Padapa has been used to indicate tree. Padapa. Pa means to drink, piba. And pad means feet. So a tree is called Padapa because it drinks with its feet. We drink through our mouth, no? But the trees drink through their feet. What are their feet? The roots. So Sanskrit is such a poetic language. It has such nice descriptions. So Padapa means tree, Kalpa Padapa. Vrindavan is full of wish-fulfilling trees, Kalpa Vriksha trees. So the Goswamis are always going around thinking, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? They had intense love for Krishna. They had captured Krishna within their hearts. But still, they were looking for Krishna. So Krishna is indeed, as Kunti Maharani says here, antar avasthitam. She is inside everyone's heart. In the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna explains, sarvasya cha aham hridi sannivishtaha. I am in the heart of all living beings. Krishna is very much there. You have seen the famous photo of Hanumanji, Bajrang Bali, tearing open his chest. And what does he reveal inside his heart? Lord Ramachandra is there, isn't it? So the Lord is there for the devotee, the Lord is manifested in the heart. He is in everybody's heart, in your heart, my heart, the ant's heart, the giraffe's heart. But for a pure devotee like Hanuman, he is manifestly present. The devotee realizes his presence tangibly. Recently in Bombay, I saw an advertisement on a hoarding. See, such is our culture. Now they are trying to make fun or make a spoof on many of the traditional ideas that we have. So they show one man tearing open his heart. So naturally, everybody who has seen this Hanuman's photo will think of Hanuman. So they show in this advertisement, he's tearing open his heart. And what is inside? Huh? Limca bottle. Just see how they are trying to exploit. So they are after limca. That is their goal. That is the dearmost object in their heart. Limca. They will die thinking of limca. But our object is to die thinking of Krishna. So Krishna is there. Soon after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit began to manifest his devotional ecstasy. Earlier he was just manifesting his pastime as a grammarian, as a Sanskrit scholar. But soon after his return from Gaya, when he met Ishwar Puri, he began to manifest intense symptoms of devotional ecstasy. And all the time he was chanting, doing Nama Sankirtan, and searching for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And sometimes when he would do this, he would get so agitated. He would roll on the ground and Sachi Mata would be very worried. How to control him? What kind of behavior is this? She just could not understand. But she had great faith in Gadadhar Pandit, who was a childhood friend of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Nimai Pandit. So she told Gadadhar, you please control him. He is beyond me. So Gadadhar Pandit pacified Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, don't worry, Krishna is there, he is in your heart. Why do you look here and there for Krishna? He is inside your heart. So when Nimai Pandit heard that, in my heart, so he took his nails and started piercing his chest, tearing open his chest. If Krishna is there, I want him. So with great difficulty, somehow Gadadhar Pandit pacified him. And Sachi Mata was very happy with Gadadhar. That somehow, no one else can control him, but you are the only one who can control him. So in this way, we see that Krishna is inside the heart and he's outside the heart. He is everywhere. So if he's inside and outside, still Kunti Maharani said, Alakshyam. Alakshyam means he is invisible. So why is he invisible to all? That is described by Kunti Maharani in the next verse. So let us chant the next verse.
Maya jamani kachannam agyadokshajam vyayam. Na lakshase mudha drisha. Nato natya dharo yatha.
Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So Kunti Maharani has stated in the earlier verse that although Krishna is everywhere, still he is invisible. So why is he invisible? She is explaining now. Because he is adhokshaja. Adha aksha ja. He is beyond the range of the aksha, the eyes and the senses. We cannot understand Krishna with these material eyes and ears and nose and so on. Krishna has to be understood by spiritual eyes. Na bhaved grahyam indriyai. Sevon mukhe hijivvado svayam eva spuratyadaha. When we serve Krishna by the process of hearing, chanting and so on, then the spiritual senses are awakened. The soul also has senses. Just like our body has senses, the subtle body has senses, the soul has senses. This is an interesting idea. Do you know that we have three eyes, three sets of eyes, three sets of ears, three sets of noses, three sets of mouths? The eye, the ear, nose that we see belongs to the gross body, what we see in the mirror when we look at it. But the subtle body, which carries the soul to the next body after death, also has its own subtle senses. And when these subtle senses leave the body, these gross senses cannot work. And finally, at the time of liberation, even the subtle body is destroyed. And that time what happens? The soul has its own senses, the spiritual senses. The soul has its own form. It has its eyes, nose, ears, tongue, everything. And by the process of rendering devotional service, these spiritual senses are awakened. Spuratyeva. So by these spiritual senses only can we see Krishna. Of course, the spiritual senses can be awakened even when the gross and subtle senses are there. There are so many examples of great devotees who are blind, but they could see Krishna. There was a story of a great devotee who was blind, and others, the pujaris, wanted to test him, whether he really understands. And they actually changed his clothes. But he identified. Because he was seeing with spiritual eyes. Krishna reveals himself to one whose heart is full of devotion. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti. So one wants to see Krishna who is beyond the senses. One has to develop one's spiritual senses by smearing the eyes with the ointment of prema or love. So people say, who is God? Where is God? Show me God. What is the proof that God is there? So our question to them should be, what is the power of your eyes to see? If there is no light, you cannot even see the hand in front of your eyes. So why should God make himself visible to you when you have no faith? He is adhokshaja. So therefore the word adhokshaja is a reply to the challenging question of the atheist to ask, where is God? Kunti Maharani also describes Krishna as being avyayam. That means imperishable, infallible. He is pure, never destroyed. His body is spiritual. And then she explains, Maya Javanika Achannam. So why is it that he can't be seen? Because there is a curtain, Javanika, of what? Of Maya. Because of a curtain of Maya, the living entities cannot see Krishna even if he is right there in front of them. Krishna was present in front of Shishupal, Duryodhan, Dushasan, Shakuni, but they could not understand him to be the Supreme Lord. Why? Because Pashyan Apina Pashyati, they were seeing but still not able to see. Because their eyes were covered by the cloud, the curtain of Maya. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Naham Prakashaha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrita Moodhoyam Nabhijanati Lokomam Ajam Avyayam. He says, by my mayic potency, I cover the eyes of all the people, so they cannot understand me, who is the Supreme Lord, who is Avyayam, beyond this material world. Therefore, when the Lord descends into this material world and human society, and he lives amongst human beings as if he were an ordinary human being, most people cannot recognize him. And Kunti Maharani gives a very beautiful analogy to explain this. She says, Nato natya dharo yatha. Just as an actor, nata, when he is acting in a drama, and he wears so many different kinds of costumes, then it's difficult to recognize. He may have a long big beard and mustache and turban and so many things, and one may not be able to recognize who this person is. So in the same way, when the Lord descends, people think he is an ordinary person. The Lord's descent into this world is also for the sake of enacting transcendental dramas. They are such wonderful dramas. Krishna's Yogamaya Shakti, his Leela Shakti, is a director. In Vrindavan, it is Vrinda Devi, Yogamaya, who are the directors of the drama that Krishna plays, his Leelas, his sporting activities. Krishna is enacting these pastimes with his devotees in the spiritual world, and he descends into this material world and often enacts those same pastimes that he enacts over there, and sometimes he also enacts those pastimes which he cannot enact over there. Can you give some example of what pastimes he does over here which he cannot do over there?
Killing the demons,
asuras. In the spiritual world there are no asuras. So when Krishna comes here, his hands are itching for a fight. He wants to fight. All of us have the fighting propensity. I think we will all agree, isn't it? Where does this fighting propensity come from? It comes from Krishna. All the propensities that we have in us, whether it is to steal, to lie, to cheat, everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna steals, Krishna lies, Krishna does all these things, but when he does it, he is glorified. We pray, we glorify him, Makhan Chor. He ran away from the battlefield like a coward. He's run short. But if a soldier here runs away from the battlefield, he'll be criticized like anything. He'll be censured by his commander, put into jail, court-martial. Or if we steal, then we'll be sent to jail. But when Krishna does these things, it is glorious. So in this way, Krishna performs all these wonderful leelas here in the pastimes. And when he's enacting the pastimes, he's somebody's father, somebody's cousin, somebody's brother, somebody's son, and so on. Just like in a drama. So those who are witnessing the drama, and often even those who are participating in the drama, they also don't understand. Just like many times, the actors in a drama, they get so involved in the drama that they don't realize who the other person is and what they are doing. They get completely absorbed. Many years ago, there was an incident that was all over the newspapers. One film hero and a film villain were fighting on the sets. And in the course of the fighting, a knife really went into the hero's stomach or something like that. So then he had to be put into hospital, and it was frontline headline news in the newspapers. So we get absorbed. So similarly, all those who participate in Krishna's pastimes by Krishna's grace are all very elevated devotees, his eternal associates. And they are under the cover of yoga maya, because of which they sometimes forget the supreme nature of Krishna. And they participate in these leelas not understanding that they are dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this connection, there are so many nice stories that come to mind. One particular story deals with the period when the Pandavas were in exile in the forest. And Krishna visited them from Dwarka. And as they were exchanging pleasantries and having nice discussions, from the skyways descended the great Rishi, Markandeya. Now, as you may be aware, Markandeya Rishi is very well known for one thing. Do you know what? He is the oldest person. Do you know how old he is? He is existing from the previous day of Brahma. And he has lived the night of Brahma also. And presently in this day of Brahma, already 7 Manvantaras have gone. There are 14 Manvantaras in one day of Brahma. So he is 1.5 Brahma days old. That is really, really very old. Crores and crores of years. So Markandeya Rishi, he descended there. And Krishna, along with all the Pandavas and other Brahmanas who were there, they rose, respectfully welcomed him, offered him the proper worship. And then Narad Muni also arrived. And all of them, including Narad, wished to hear from Markandeya Rishi. And Yudhishthira Maharaj asked him many wonderful questions. All very instructive questions and answers. We won't discuss the whole dialogue now, but just the relevant portion. After discussing for a long time, because Markandeya Rishi had been personally instructed by Lord Narayan, and he had lived from the previous day of Brahma, so he knew the ancient histories for so many crores of years. So he was able to authoritatively give answers to many questions. And he had been blessed by the Lord, not only with a long life, but also with clear memory of everything that happened in that long life. So he was able to give very, very good explanations of all the histories, the great kings, the great saintly persons, the great appearances of the Lord in different incarnations, and so on. And then he went on to explain how one time he came across an extraordinary experience. What was that? And here I will mix the stories of the Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam. In the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story of how Markandeya Rishi one time wanted to understand the Maya Shakti of the Lord. How strong is Maya? He was in his meditation and all of a sudden the Supreme Lord appeared in front of him. He was overwhelmed with ecstasy. Having welcomed the Lord, as was appropriate, the Lord blessed him and asked him, "What benediction do you want?" And Markandeya Rishi said, "My dear Lord, I want to see the power of your illusory potency, of your Maya Shakti." It was not the right thing to ask for. as Markandeya Rishi would soon realize. And Vishnu, by a gentle smile, indicated so. Don't tell me later if you're in trouble. Don't tell me. You were saying it's all right, I will fulfill your desires, but if something happens tomorrow, don't blame me. So he gently smiled, said Tathastu, all right. And he disappeared. Markandeya Rishi continued to live his normal life for some time. And one day, all of a sudden, there were tremendous rainfall from the sky, huge clouds, that the Samvartak clouds that are to be used only at the time of Pralaya, the universal destruction, they came around. It was pouring pillars, not just drops. Huge pillars of rain were falling, and within no time, the entire surface of the earth was covered with water. One could not distinguish land from the sky. No question of trees and mountains and buildings and cities and villages, everything was submerged. And Markandeya Rishi was swimming in this water. Somehow he went on swimming and swimming, and he was not dying, he was not drowning. At the same time he was there. So he was swimming and wondering, he was overwhelmed by fear, what to do. Sometimes there would be ferocious animals, water animals going under him, the sharks and whales. But somehow miraculously he survived, none of them ate him. And this went on for millions of years, for a long, long time. And Markandeya Rishi continued to be in that water. And then, one day, of course, what day and what night, but still, as a matter of speaking, he just saw something in the distance, and he quickly began to swim towards it. And he saw, there is an extraordinary sight. There is a beautiful child here. His complexion is like a rain cloud. His hair is beautiful, black and curly. His eyes are like lotus petals. And he has a most enchanting smile, displaying small pearl-like teeth. And he has many, many beautiful ornaments on his body. And he is lying on a banyan leaf. Vatasya patrasya. Kararvinde padarvindam. And with his lotus hands, he is holding his lotus foot and he is putting it into his mouth and he is sucking his toe. This is a very famous pose of Krishna, of baby Krishna. So he was thinking, who is this? He saw the Srivatsa mark on the chest. Ah, this is Vishnu. But he was not sure. So this pose of Krishna is very, very significant. It's there in the Srirangam temple on the walls, those of you who have been there. But interestingly, although it is such a sweet and beautiful form, it is called Ugra Roop. Ugra means something like Narsingadev's Roop, when he's killing Hiranyakashipu. So why is this called an Ugra Roop, when it's such a delicate, sweet, enchanting form? It is explained by the Acharyas, because this form appears at the time of universal destruction, when everything is destroyed. And the second question arises, why does Krishna suck his toe? You have seen children, little babies, they often, their bodies are so flexible, they will pull their toe and suck it. It's possible for them. So why does Krishna do it? The Acharyas explain that Krishna wants to know what it is about his lotus feet that is attracting the devotees. The devotees are always glorifying me and they are composing so many wonderful poems and bhajans saying that your lotus feet are full of nectar. What nectar? Let me see for myself. Let me taste and see. Now naturally, if a grown-up starts sucking his own toe, it is going to be really a problematic thing. People will think something wrong about him. But if a child sucks his toe, that's normal. Everybody, all children, babies do that. So Krishna has accepted the baby pose to be able to taste the nectar of his own lotus feet. So anyway, Markandeya Rishi saw this extraordinary sight. His eye was captivated. And he went out to embrace this child. He plunged out of the water trying to embrace this child in his arms. And as he leaped forward, he shot in like a bullet into the mouth or rather through the nostrils of this boy, and he went inside the belly of this child. And what did he see there? He saw the whole earth planet with all the mountains and rivers and seas and villages and cities. He saw his own ashram. He saw himself, just like Mother Yashoda had seen when Krishna opened the mouth, his mouth. And then he saw the whole universe. And in this way he was moving around in the belly of Krishna. And then when Krishna breathed out, like a mosquito coming out, he came out. And he came outside. And at that time, the Lord told him, "My dear child, you have wanted to rest in me. Now you please come and rest within me for the night of Brahma. And when the night is over, then you will come out again." And in this way, the Lord brought him out again. And after the day of Brahma was there, then Markandeya Rishi found himself sitting in his ashram in meditation, just as he was before this whole experience began. He had a complete experience of the Maya of the Lord. How the Lord has put him in such an extraordinary situation. And then Markandeya Rishi explained to the Pandavas and the assembled sages, he said, that personality, that child who was lying on that banyan leaf, was none other than the Supreme Lord Hari, Vishnu himself, who was the origin of all the universes. He was the same personality who is the source of all the universes. He is the same person who maintains all the universes. And he is also the personality on whom the entire creation rests after it is destroyed. And my dear Yudhishthir Maharaj, please know, that very same personality who at that time I saw on the lotus leaf is here in front of you now as Krishna. Do not think he is different. Recognize him for what he is. He is that same Supreme Personality. And Yudhishthir Maharaj was struck with wonder. Oh, Krishna, our cousin, our friend, he's the Supreme Lord. So Yudhishthir knew, but his sense of love, intimacy and friendship with Krishna was so strong, it overwhelmed his understanding of the Godhood of Krishna. At that time, Markandeya Rishi looked at Krishna with eyes full of love. And Krishna also looked back again at his own devotee with loving eyes. But Krishna was pretending, okay, you say what you like, but... But Markandeya Rishi very clearly told the Pandavas, don't think that because he is your cousin and your friend, don't misunderstand him to be an ordinary man. You see, there are two kinds of ignorance regarding God. Actually many kinds, but in this context, one is to think God to be an ordinary man, and the second, to think an ordinary man to be God. Isn't it? When the Supreme Lord descends as an avatar in this world, there are many who don't understand that He is the Lord. Some time ago, I had come across one copy of the Ramayana, written by a personality who is very well known in the history of Indian politics. He was the Governor General of India, such a high post. And he had written this book. And it came into my hands and I looked through the preface. And in the very second or third paragraph he writes, we should know that Ram is not a historical personality. This is a mythological story. But Ram stands for so many ideals and then so on. I shut the book, kept it. One may have been a governor general, one may have been considered a great scholar, but he doesn't understand that Ram is God. He doesn't understand that Ram is a historical personality who appeared in this world, on this earth, in Treta Yuga. Like so many other scholars of this world, he also thought that this is mythology. But this is not mythology, this is history. So therefore many, many people like this, they misunderstand God to be a human. And about Krishna, the less said the better, how many people think so many things about him. Many, many misunderstandings are there. And on the other side, there are many people who think an ordinary man to be God. In South India, practically every month there is a Kalki taking avatar here. Isn't it? It seems every other day we hear news that some Kalki has come now, although he's supposed to come only end of Kali Yuga. But somebody who has a little mystic power, everybody calls him God. And these people also don't refuse. Another so-called Bhagavan was asked by ISKCON devotees many years ago that you proclaim yourself to be God. Are you really God? He says, no, I'm not God, but only my disciples call me God. What can I do? So they said, well, if they call you God, you should correct them. If you don't protest, it means you agree to what they say. When Prabhupada founded ISKCON in the first few years, some of his disciples, in fact, two of them who had taken sannyas, there was a group of four sannyasis, some of his early sannyasis. And he heard that in New Vrindavan, they had started spreading the word that Prabhupada is God, that he is an incarnation of God. Prabhupada became so furious, he threw them out of ISKCON. He said, they are no longer in this movement, he cannot be here. If he spread this kind of talk that can mislead the people, this will cause great damage to our mission. So he actually asked them to leave the mission. So we can see that if there is someone who is being called as God, he should protest and say, no, I am not God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also set the example. Even though he was the Supreme Lord himself, whenever someone called him as an incarnation or as God, he would close his ears and say, Vishnu, 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 do not say such a thing. Do not commit such a blasphemy. I am just a humble person, like that. Similarly, out of love, not out of ignorance, out of love under the influence of Yoga Maya, the great devotees like Yudhishthir, Arjun, they do not understand that Krishna is God. In the Bhagavad Gita, the 11th chapter, Krishna reveals the Virat Roop to Arjuna. And after seeing that most terrible and awesome form, Arjuna becomes extremely overwhelmed. He becomes terrified. It's such a fearful, awe-inspiring form we cannot imagine. We just see that painting in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it, Virat Roop? It's just a nice painting to see. But the actual experience of the Virat Roop is beyond our imagination, beyond our comprehension. Arjuna began trembling. And then he requested, Krishna, please come back to your original form. I cannot take it. And then after he did that, then he chanted, he spoke a very nice verse.
Saketi matva prasabham yaduktam He Krishna he yadav he saketi Ajanata mahimanam tavedam Maya pramadat pranayena vapi.
He said, my dear Krishna, Sakheti Matva, I was under the impression, Sakha Iti, that you are my friend, Prasabham, the Uktva, and I was speaking of you as my friend. And I called you, Hey Krishna, Hey Yadava, Hey Sakha, O my friend, I addressed you in these very endearing and intimate ways in the past. Ajanata Mahiman, I did not know your glories. And so please forgive me for all the times that I may have offended you and tried to be very intimate with you, either pranayena, out of love, or pramadat, out of some kind of madness or foolishness. I may have addressed you in ways that were not appropriate for you as a Supreme Lord. So please forgive me. Many times we sat together, we ate together, we walked together, we joked together. I treated you as an equal. But now I see your Virat Roop and understand you in your greatness. I think I have made a great mistake. So Krishna doesn't like this attitude in his devotees. He preferred Arjuna as a friend. He preferred Arjuna calling him, Hey Keshava, Hey Krishna, Hey Sakha. He didn't want Arjuna in this mood of awe and reverence. But Arjuna, having understood, just like Mother Yashoda, when she understood and saw the Virat Roop and Krishna's form, her Vatsalya Bhav became diminished. And Krishna didn't relish that. So he immediately covered her again with yoga maya. Similarly with Arjuna, once again he was back as Krishna's friend after this vision. So in this way we see that there are the intimate dealings between the devotees and the Lord are very, very beautiful. In a drama, you may notice, even if someone has a great disguise, if there's someone who's very close to that person, if he's very intimate to that person, he can recognize him. If your friend is playing the role of Aurangzeb or Shivaji or somebody, you'll be able to recognize him. But if someone doesn't know him well, then he may not recognize. I remember one drama played by devotees, and one lady, Mataji, was playing the role in the drama. Many characters were there on the stage. And her small son was in the audience with the father. And the mother was acting on the stage as Sita Devi or something she was acting. And the makeup was very nice. And this child, as soon as mother came, he saw everyone looking at Sita. And he shouted, "Mummy!" The whole audience exploded in laughter. And the poor lady on the stage had a hard time trying to concentrate on her dialogues. The child recognized my mother. She was in a different form, wearing a different dress, looking very strange. But the child recognized mother immediately, called out, "Yes, this is my mother." So similarly, a devotee recognizes the Lord. The devotee may try to, the Lord may try to hide his nature. He may try to cover his nature as a Supreme Lord. But the devotee understands. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a narration of, there is a dialogue between Haridas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu poses many questions to Haridas Thakur and asks him about how the living entities in this world can be delivered. And Haridas Thakur answers many, many deep and intricate questions. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is wonderstruck. He says, "Haridas, how did you know all these wonderful things? These are my intimate pastimes. How could you understand that I intend to deliver the whole world like this?" So, as a purport, after having narrated this pastime, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, "Ishvara svabhava aishvara chahe achhadite bhakta chani lukaite nare hoite vidite." He says it is the nature of the Lord, Ishvara svabhava aishvara chahe achhadite. He wants to cover his opulence when he descends here. He wants to cover his position as the Lord. He doesn't want to show that he is the Lord. However, when it comes to a devotee, then Krishna can't hide. Bhakte thani lokayate nare. When it comes to the association of devotees, Krishna's disguise doesn't hold good. A devotee recognizes, "Yes, this is the Lord." Haridas Thakur recognized him, "Yes, you are the Lord. I know you. You can't fool me. You may fool the whole world, but I know you are the Supreme Lord. Don't cheat me." Similarly, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Sanatana Goswami, giving him so many nice instructions, in the course of this shiksha, the subject came to incarnations of God. And as this wonderful topic was being discussed, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started outlining the characteristics of an avatar and how to understand who is an avatar and who is not. And then he started describing the symptoms of Kali Yuga and the characteristics of the avatar in Kali Yuga. And then Sanatana Goswami, being very intelligent, he started making very subtle references to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the incarnation. So these symptoms, how do we understand who is the incarnation in this age? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood. Sanatana, you are very intelligent. Now stop your tricks and let us go on with our discussion. Sanatana Goswami wanted to hear from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, "Yes, I am the incarnation, I am the Lord himself." But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't fall in the trap. But the point is that Sanatana Goswami understood that, "Yes, he is the Supreme Lord. He cannot hide. Although he has come in the guise of a devotee, but he is the Supreme Lord." So the Lord can't hold his disguises or his different forms in front of the devotees. Another famous example is in Krishna Leela in Vrindavan. This episode happened at a place called Paita near Govardhan. One time Krishna left the Rasa Leela dance. He left the company of the gopis and he went away because Srimati Radharani was not there. And as he was hiding at a certain place, all the gopis came looking for him. And Krishna saw, oh, the gopis are coming. Now what to do? So he said, okay, I'll disguise myself. I will have my four-armed form. So Krishna became Narayan. With his four-armed form, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, he was standing there. And the gopis came looking, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And they saw Narayan. Imagine if we were walking somewhere looking, saw Narayan in front, we would be certainly very much impressed. The gopis were not very impressed. They said, oh, Narayan, namaskar, please accept our obeisances. Have you seen Krishna? Where is Krishna? So the gopis went away. Then Srimati Radharani came. When Srimati Radharani came, then two arms of Narayan suddenly melted. Krishna could not hold on to those extra two arms. Because of the intensity of the bhakti or the love of Srimati Radharani, Krishna had to come back to his original form. So we can see that although Krishna is like an actor in a drama who can't be recognized, but he can't be recognized by those whose eyes are covered by Mahamaya, like Duryodhan, Paundrak, and so on. Duryodhan saw a certain type of Virat Roop. Duryodhan heard from Vidur, from Sanjay, from Dhritarashtra about Krishna being the Supreme Lord. But he could not accept. He could not understand. So this is a beautiful shloka in which Kunti Maharani is talking about how Krishna cannot be recognized. Sometimes devotees also do not recognize immediately, but they recognize after a certain time, because Krishna wants to enjoy a certain pastime with them. You all know the story from Krishna book of the Shamantaka jewel. You've all read Krishna book, right? The Shamantaka jewel was presented by Suryadev to whom? Shatrajit. And one time he gave it to his brother. His brother wore that Shamantaka mani as a locket around his neck and he went hunting astride his horse. And it so happened that he came across a lion. The lion killed the brother of Shatrajit and took away the mani, the Shamantaka jewel. Jambavan, the great associate of Lord Ramachandra from Treta Yuga, who was also living at the end of Dwapar Yuga. He was so old, you can imagine. He was already old even at that time in Treta Yuga. So you can imagine how old he was now. So he took that jewel and gave it as a toy to his child who was playing. And the blame came on Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna was accused by Shatrajit that you have stolen the Shamantaka jewel. So all of us have experienced sometimes being criticized by others, isn't it? So let us take some solace. It happens even to Krishna. Even Krishna is not spared in this world. Such is the nature of this material world. So Krishna was thinking, what to do now? I have to clear my good name. So Krishna understood. He went into the forest. He found out what happened. He found the dead body of the brother of Shatrajit. And he traced the marks. And he came to the cave and he found a child playing with that jewel. And he went to take it. And the child created a ruckus. The maid servant came running. She started screaming, somebody has come. And then Jambavan came out furious, who has come? And then he saw Krishna, but didn't recognize him as the Supreme Lord. And then they had a fight. For 28 days, non-stop, continuously, they wrestled together. Morning to night, they went on and on and on. Even though Jambavan was very old, he was still extremely powerful. And as the days went on, by the time the 28th day came, Jambavan began thinking, even though I am old, no one on this planet can tolerate to wrestle with me for 28 days. This person has survived, and on the contrary, he is about to defeat me. Therefore, this can be none other than my worshipable Lord. Then he surrendered. And then Krishna gave him the understanding. He said, yes, I am the same Lord who came in Treta Yuga. And then Jambavan offered his profuse apologies. My Lord, I could not recognize you. You had come in this guise. You are my same worshipable Lord Ram, whom I served in Ayodhya. So because Krishna wanted to enjoy Viri Ras, he wanted to enjoy the mood, rasa of chivalry, so he covered the eyes of Jambavan. If Jambavan had recognized him right in the beginning, there would not have been any wrestling. Krishna would not have had that fun. So this is the wonderful subject, the nectarian subject of how Krishna, when he comes, he is sometimes recognized and sometimes not recognized. So when he comes into this world, how can one recognize him? That is given by Kunti Maharani in the next verse. So let us take text 20.
Tatha paramahansanam muninam amalatmanam. Bhakti yoga vidhanartham katham pashye mahi striyah.
You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators, who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Kunti Maharani is saying in this verse to Krishna that you descend for the purpose of giving bhakti to great yogis, paramahansas, jnanis, those who have performed austerities, who are very learned. You give them bhakti. But I am only an ordinary woman. So how can I know you? How can women like me know you? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, regarding him, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya has composed a verse wherein he explains, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshartham Ekah Purushah Puranah Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharirdhari Kripam Budhin Yastam Aham Prapadye. The Supreme Lord has descended in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya for the sake of teaching Vairagya and Vidya in relation to devotional service. That is the purpose of his descent. And I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So Krishna comes to give bhakti. But Kunti Maharani is saying, but normally the process of spiritual life is taken by all these advanced transcendentalists. I am not an advanced transcendentalist. I am not a philosopher. I am not a scholar. Or I have not performed austerities. So how can women like me know you? This is a very important point. Srila Prabhupada says many nice things in his purport. He explains that it is a general observation throughout the world that whenever there are religious gatherings, open religious gatherings, it is more frequent to find more ladies than men. Isn't it? ISKCON may be an exception. There are equal number. But generally, if you see in traditional temples, festivals, there are a few ladies are there, a few old people are there, and the men, not interested. One time I was talking to one gentleman whose wife used to come to the temple. And the wife was saying, please tell my husband to come for the temple programs. So I said one time, okay. So I had a word with him. I said, why don't you come? It's nice programs in the temple. Oh, my wife is coming, so it's okay. So I wanted to tell him, I did not tell him, lest he get upset. But I wanted to tell him immediately, your wife is eating, why do you eat? Just as you need to eat yourself to nourish your own body, the wife will eat to nourish her body. When the wife comes to the temple and she hears chants and progresses in Krishna consciousness, that's for her soul. You can't go back to Godhead by proxy. You have to do yourself Krishna consciousness. Certainly there will be some benefits if our family members go. It rubs off on us also. We will get the benefit of eating prasadam and so on. But nevertheless, if one is serious about going home back to Godhead, then one must personally take to this process very seriously. At the time of death, one will be answerable for oneself personally. One cannot say, oh, my wife was going to the temple. When the Yamadut has come for us, that time we can't say. So therefore, women in general, because of their simple nature, they easily put faith. Prabhupada explains that because they can easily accept the authority of the Supreme Lord, they more easily bow down to the Lord and offer obeisances. So the Lord is much more pleased with their sincere, humble devotion than by the showy, insincere religious fervor of many others, or by dry scholarship, or by ritualistic activities performed mechanically. He is not pleased by these things. So Kunti Maharani is in such a position. So this simplicity is what is really required. Krishna then accepts this mood of simple devotion very, very easily. Kunti Maharani is exhibiting here a very humble mood that is necessary for all of us. It is generally found that women, they have a natural attraction to the path of bhakti, but the men also, because ultimately whether in female body, male body, the Atma by nature is attracted to Krishna. So when it comes to Krishna, on the spiritual platform, the soul is feminine. So all the jivas are equally attracted to Krishna. So the men also must take to the process of bhakti with equal seriousness. There is some misconception amongst people that the Gyan Marg is for those who are intellectual. The Yoga Marg is for those who are physically fit. And the Bhakti Marg is for those who are sentimental. But that's not so. Bhakti Marg is for those who are the most intelligent. Whether in female body, male body, it doesn't matter. So all human beings should take to this process of bhakti very seriously. There are similar great examples of lady devotees like Kunti in history. We know the example of Draupadi, the daughter-in-law of Kunti. How Krishna came in response to her calls, more than in response to the call of the Pandavas. You know the story of the Akshay Patra. At the time of the Akshay Patra, all the five Pandavas were flustered when Durvasa Muni came for lunch, having been sent by Duryodhan. What to do, what to do? Now such a calamity will befall us. Durvasa Muni will curse us. And at that time, Draupadi called for Krishna. And Krishna came, just like that. From Dwarka, hop, step and jump, and he came to the forest where they were, far, far, thousands of kilometers away. For Krishna, it is not difficult to come in response to our prayers. When we beseech him very feelingly, he comes immediately. And then, you know how he solved the Pandava's problem? And Durvasa Muni went away from there. Similarly, when she was being disrobed in the assembly of the Kauravas, it was her pitiful crying for Govinda, for Krishna, that caused Krishna to descend again and come, incarnated in the form of her cloth. Similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan also prayed in this most wonderful way, in a mood of humility. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a nice prayer. Ahuschate nalinanabha padaravindam
योगेश्वरे हृदि विचिन्त्यम् अगाध बोधेः संसारकूपपतितोत्तरणावलम्बम् गेहं जुषामपि मनस्युदयात् सदा नः.
The gopis are praying to Krishna. They are saying, my dear Krishna, you are the object to be attained by those great yogis and learned people, agadh bodhay, jnanis, whose knowledge is very vast. Yogeshwarer, those who are expert in yoga, in ashtanga yoga, they keep you in their heart, ready. Your lotus feet. Nalina Nab means one who has a navel like that of a lotus. O lotus naveled one, your lotus feet are always sought after by the great yogis and the great philosophers and jnanis. So they are eligible to obtain you. You can see the similarity with Kunti's present prayer. But as far as we are concerned, what can I say? Geham Jusham. Geham means in the house. Jusham means engaged. We are household ladies. We are village ladies. What do we know about philosophy and austerities and yoga and all these things? So we also wish that you will dawn in our heart. The lotus feet of yours should also manifest within our hearts and be there eternally. Because you are Sansara Kupa Patita Uttarana. We have fallen into the Sansara Kupa, into this dark ocean of material existence. Family life in the Srimad Bhagavatam has been called like a deep dark well, Andhakupa. So the gopis are saying, we are in this Andhakupa, Sansara Kupa Patita, we have fallen here. But then you are the deliverer. So please deliver us from this existence, worldly existence, and let your lotus feet dawn in our hearts. In this way the gopis pray. Similarly, the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas in Mathura, they were also very exalted. You know that story from Krishna book. When Krishna Balaram wanted food, they readily gave. Whereas their husbands, the Brahmanas, were busy performing their yajnas, they refused to give. And later the Brahmanas understood, oh, we were so foolish. But our wives, we thought them to be ordinary ladies, but they are exalted personalities because they have understood the Supreme Lord. So in this way, Kunti Maharani is saying here in her mood of humility, Katham Pashya Mahi Sriyaha, how will we know as ladies? But in the path of bhakti, there is no impediment. Whatever be the condition of our body, male, female, child, adult, old, young, we can all understand Krishna. The path of bhakti is for all of us. But what we need to do is to develop the same mood of humility that Kunti Maharani has expressed in this prayer. Then Krishna will surely accept our offerings and our devotion, and our human life will be successful. So we will stop here. There are so many things to say more, but time doesn't stop. It moves on. And also, there are so many verses to do. So tomorrow we will try to finish some more verses. And then on a subsequent visit, we will try to finish the other verses also at a little quicker pace. So just for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, we will have some questions, if you have any. And any other questions that are remaining, we can have tomorrow evening. Is that all right? Any questions? Yes. The question is that the bhav in Vrindavan is that they don't understand Krishna because of Yogamaya, that they don't understand him to be the Supreme Lord. But here we see in this prayer that they understand that He is the Supreme Lord. So it seems like a contradiction. Sometimes they know. But in that mood they may pray like this sometimes. But more often than not they don't know. And their love for Krishna is so intense that even though they may have the knowledge, that knowledge gets overpowered by their sense of love. So even though they may know that Krishna is God, if at all, but sometimes they don't care. It doesn't matter to them. For them, Krishna is just their lovable object. Right? Any other question or comment? Yes. The question is that under what circumstances is it Yoga Maya and when is it Mahamaya? For one who is a pure devotee, it is Yoga Maya. For one who is not a devotee, it is Mahamaya. It's the same energy. Therefore Krishna has said in the Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrita. He uses the word Yoga Maya because the original energy is Yoga Maya. When Yoga Maya appears in this material world to delude the materialistic people, that same Yoga Maya is called Mahamaya. So actually, fundamentally, it is the same energy. Prabhupada explains this by saying that electricity, when it goes through a heater, it creates heat. When it goes through a fridge, it creates coldness. It is not that electricity is hot or cold. Electricity is what it is. Similarly, the same Yogamaya Shakti, when it works on an instrument, that is a devotee, it creates forgetfulness of Krishna, Krishna's greatness, but it increases the love for Krishna. When the instrument is a materialistic person, that Yogamaya acts as Mahamaya and increases the forgetfulness of Krishna and makes the person go further away from Krishna. So the same original energy acts in two opposite ways depending on what the instrument is, that is what the person is, devotee or non-devotee. Any other question?
Persons like Duryodhana also must have heard what rishis like Markandeya Muni spoke about last week. Still, why is that which makes
the question is that Duryodhana and others also heard about the supremacy of Krishna. So why did they not accept? What was it that made them not accept? Envy. Envy was so intense that they could not accept. Even when Dhritarashtra was convinced by Sanjaya's glorification of Krishna as the Supreme Lord, do you know what Duryodhana said? Even if Krishna and Arjuna team up to destroy the whole universe, I will not accept Krishna. And he walked out of the room and in a huff. And then Gandhari cursed him, saying, "You are a foolish boy. You will repent only as you lie dying on the battlefield, your body broken by the mace of Bhima." Dhritarashtra cursed him, "You are such a foolish boy, it looks like you have taken a vow to destroy our dynasty. Accept Krishna, accept his good advice." No, he was obstinate because of his envy and his ego. He could not surrender. So therefore, although everything was available for him, but he could not surrender to Krishna. Any other question? Yes.
Generally, it is said that the Kshatriyas in the mood of fighting, they are in the mood of passion. Now, you said here, Krishna does not come under any of these kingdoms. Now, for example, in the Kurukshetra war, to protect Arjuna against Kshatriyas. And while you said this, with Jambavan in particular place? Was he in any kind of mode or not?
The question is that a kshatriya is in a mode of passion. When Krishna acts as a kshatriya, as he does in a battlefield, is he also under the three modes or under the mode of passion? What is the answer? No. It's a drama. It's a leela. It's a pastime. It appears that Krishna is there acting with the mode of passion, but the mode of passion is not there. He acts as if he were under the mode of passion. But Krishna's activities are always transcendental. Krishna actually is not a kshatriya or a vaishya. He is transcendental to the varnas, transcendental to the ashrams. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. He retains his spiritual status, his absolute status at all times. Okay? Yes, but when we act angrily, that is under Rajaguna. But when Krishna acts angrily, that is not Rajaguna. That is transcendental. Yes. 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 Ah. That's a good question. We said that all the qualities we have and propensities we have are there in Krishna. So is there envy in Krishna? There is only one thing that he doesn't have. Because envy is a perverted reflection. It comes in the absence of pure love. So therefore Krishna doesn't have that. Krishna doesn't have envy. He has only pure love, pure compassion. The perverted reflection of compassion is envy. So when that envy is destroyed, then one becomes very compassionate. One cannot be compassionate so long as one is envious. That is why the saintly persons who are free from envy, they are the ones who are compassionate. Otherwise it is not possible. Alright? So we will chant for 5 minutes. And if you have any more questions, tomorrow is available in the evening. We can discuss more question answers.